Are you a math person? If not, you might think mathematics is just an abstraction. And it is, but it's also a deep and deeply mysterious description of the universe we live in. And it's played a key role in our understanding of things like the Big Bang, black holes, and our everyday experience of forces like gravity. Here to share this story is Steve Natas, co-author with eminent mathematician Xinyong Tao of The Gravity of Math: How Geometry Rules the Universe. Steve is a science journalist and a contributing editor to Astronomy and Discover magazines. He's written or contributed to dozens of books, and he joins us now to share five big ideas from his latest.
I'm Steve Natas, a science writer living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I'm here to talk about The Gravity of Math, the book I wrote with the mathematician Xingtong Yao, formerly at Harvard, and now based at Tsinghua University in Beijing. I've been asked to talk about five key insights from this book. And here's the first. Gravity is geometry. Just to be clear, that's not an idea that Yao and I came up with. It's something Albert Einstein figured out more than 100 years ago. And it probably is not what he expected to find when he set out in 1905 to create a new theory of gravity. The prevailing theory of gravity, devised in the mid to late 1600s by Isaac Newton, breaks down when objects are moving very fast, at speeds close to that of light, and when gravitational fields are very strong. Einstein sought a law that was not subject to those same limitations. Although Newton's law works well in ordinary, non-extreme situations, the picture it paints is all wrong, according to Einstein. Newton regarded gravity as an attractive force between two or more massive objects. Einstein envisioned something very different. A massive object like the sun, he said, bends the fabric of space and time around it, just as a bowling ball would deform a stretched rubber sheet when placed in the middle. The deformation caused by the sun, for example, keeps smaller objects, like the planets in our solar system, within the sun's gravitational grip. Expressed in other terms, a massive object causes a surface to bend or curve, and the surface that does the curving in Einstein's theory is the combination of space and time called space-time. The effect we call gravity stems directly from the curvature of space-time, but the shape and curvature of any surface relates closely to its geometry, which is why one can say that gravity is, in essence, geometry. Here's the second insight. Although Einstein was surely a genius, he was not a lone genius when it came to developing his theory of gravity. That theory became increasingly mathematical as he became more deeply enmeshed in this decade-long endeavor, and mathematics was not his strong suit. Einstein had little interest in the subject as a student and young scientist, and he consequently paid little attention to it. But when he realized that his gravitational theory would depend heavily on curved spaces, involving a kind of geometry he was unfamiliar with, he called on a friend for help, a former college classmate named Marcel Grossmann, who specialized in geometry. Grossmann introduced Einstein to the work of Bernhard Riemann, who had invented in the 1850s a new branch of geometry that focused on higher-dimensional curved spaces. That turned out to be just what Einstein needed. In 1913, Einstein and Grossmann published a paper that presented the first draft of the equations of gravity, also known as the field equations of general relativity. Einstein wrote the physics part, Grossmann wrote the mathematics part. That paper almost got things right, but it had some fatal flaws that took Einstein another 2 years to sort out. And in those years, he got help from other leading mathematicians, including Tullio Levi-Civita, and David Hilbert. Although Einstein did not go it entirely on his own, his accomplishment was still extraordinary. Here's the third insight. Einstein produced a revolutionary theory of gravity, but he was conservative when it came to the implications of that theory. The equations of gravity that Einstein published in November 1915 had just a few terms and could fit onto a single line. They looked deceptively simple, but they were actually quite complicated. so much so that he was not sure that an exact solution to them could ever be found. As things turned out, he did not have to wait long. About a month later, Einstein received the first of two letters from Karl Schwarzschild, an astrophysicist who was then fighting for the German cause in World War I. Schwarzschild had found solutions to Einstein's equations that described the geometry of spacetime both inside and outside a spherical star. Schwarzschild showed that if the star's interior contained enough mass packed into a small enough radius, the pressure and density at the star's center would approach infinity. In other words, he had described what, 50 years later, would be called a black hole. Although the strange star conjured up by Schwarzschild sprung directly from Einstein's equations, Einstein did not believe that such an object could actually exist. If the result were real, it would be a true disaster, he claimed. There should be a law of nature to prevent a star from behaving in such an absurd way, his colleague Arthur Eddington maintained. But to the contrary, all evidence suggests that some stars do behave in such an absurd way. Here's the fourth insight. Einstein originated the concept of gravitational waves, yet he doubted their physical reality. In 1916, drawing upon his theory of general relativity, Einstein predicted that massive objects accelerating through spacetime will cause ripples to form, gravitational waves that are analogous to the waves generated by a powerboat speeding across a once calm pond, except that these waves would travel in every direction. It was a prescient notion, one that took a century to confirm, yet Einstein again doubted the strength of his theory. In 1936, 20 years after his original prediction, Einstein was prepared to speak at Princeton University on the non-existence of gravitational waves. However, he softened his stance when a colleague pointed out an error in the paper that Einstein had planned to base his talk on. So he instead adopted a more moderate position in his lecture, saying that, "If you ask me whether there are gravitational waves or not, I must answer that I don't know, but it is a highly interesting problem." That turned out to be a much better way of phrasing things. For in 2015, the first gravitational waves were detected at the LIGO Observatory. Since then, there have been roughly 100 other detections associated with collisions between two black holes or between two neutron stars, or even the collision of a black hole and a neutron star. And just last year, an international study revealed that there may be a permanent gravitational wave background reverberating throughout the universe. It appears that Einstein got things right the first time. And now for the fifth insight. What Einstein called his greatest blunder, the cosmological constant, is now known to dominate our universe. In 1917, Einstein had a realization that might be called an epiphany. His gravitational theory did not just apply to the motions of planets in our solar system or to the motions of stars in our galaxy. It could be applied to the behavior of the universe as a whole. Einstein recognized that the universe could expand or contract unless he added a term to his equations called the cosmological constant, a calming influence that would keep things just as they were, consistent with the view that he and others then shared about a tranquil, unchanging universe. But Einstein never liked the term because it messed up his otherwise elegant equations. "I am unable to believe that such an ugly thing should be realized in nature," he said. It turns out that Einstein was right to insert the term, though he did so for the wrong reasons. In 1998, it was discovered that the universe is expanding at an accelerated rate, spurred on by something called dark energy. The cosmological constant that Einstein fretted over for so long is now believed to be dark energy, an invisible energy field that permeates all space and is thought to comprise 70% of the universe's total mass and energy. That percentage, moreover, is steadily growing. I don't have time for a sixth insight, other than to say that the mathematical development of general relativity did not end in 1915. New academic papers on this subject come out practically every day, probing the nature of black holes, and investigating the beginning of our universe. New academic papers on this subject come out practically every day, probing the nature of black holes and investigating the beginning of our universe, among other interesting things that theorists contemplate. Mathematical relativity is still a rich, active, and evolving field that happens to be the focus of our book, The Gravity of Math. So thanks for listening. And if you do get a chance to look at this book, I hope that other insights will come to you. I might also say, in closing, may the force of gravity be with you. But as we've discussed, gravity is not really a force in the way we normally think about forces. It is a consequence of geometry, which brings us back to the starting point for this whole conversation. Thanks again.
Thank you, Steve. That was Five Big Ideas from The Gravity of Math, How Geometry Rules the Universe by Steve Natas and Xingtong Yao. Also, check out our book bite for Is Math Real? How Simple Questions Lead Us to Mathematics' Deepest Truths by Eugenia Chang. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.